Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 59. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And once again, we have gathered together two other people to make up for and cast our predictions about the future. Whoa. Do you like how I worked that all together this time?
I do like that. In fact, next week, if you could do get a little bit cheesier next time, I think I would appreciate that a little bit
possible.
More. But you're right. And it's four with an F-O-U-R. That's four people. And we have really two awesome guests today. I'm really excited to be here with them.
Joining us, owner of Combots LLC and suicidebots.com. I had it written out much better and it just got changed. You're a blogger at suicidebots.com and a co-producer of... Robo games. See, I could do it from memory. Somebody changed my doc. I'll find out about that later. But Simone, welcome. It's great to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Also joining us, a last minute ad because our other guest had to bow out unexpectedly, Mr. Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks, editor of UltimateAVMag.com and online editor of HomeTheaterMag.com. Thank you, Scott, for being on. We really appreciate it.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
I've been wanting to have you on, you know, as part of the whole, we have a long list of people. So I was happy that you were able to not only be on today, but fill in and keep us at four, because three casts just doesn't make any sense.
No, and I love thinking about the future, too. So this is like a perfect show for me.
All right. Now, I, at this point, am supposed to read something from a listener. Usually we go and we get an email, but I'm going to try to pull something off the blog at forecastpodcast.com if it will load for me.
And it's not internet willing, Tom.
Yeah, it's the internet. The internet today is just being really kind of a jerk.
Squirrely.
About things. Yeah, it's being squirrely would be a good word for it. No, it's not going to happen. I'm going to have to go to the email after all. All right.
To the email.
The wheel of email. Actually, this whole thing that I'm doing is just a way of covering the fact that I didn't pull an email beforehand.
Oh.
All right.
I couldn't tell. But
so here's our email. This is to officially inform you that your compensation funds of €485,000 has been finalized. Oh, wait. I guess I shouldn't have picked that one. How about this one from Jake Bowles? He says, in a recent episode, you discussed the idea of virtual performers gaining fame and the possible repercussions. We just wanted to point you to this link on YouTube and share a bit of info. In Japan, there's a voice synthesizer program called Vocaloid. As far as I know, it works in a similar fashion to any other synth program, but instead of synthesizing notes and chords, it creates songs using the voice of whichever persona or avatar you choose. There are a few different avatars, though the most popular is easily Miku, a teal-haired robot schoolgirl. Using the Vocaloid program, a whole bunch of people created their own songs sung by Miku. Using animation programs, people have given her own character. She sings and dances, and there are hundreds of videos of the Miku character dancing online, created by dozens of different people. Essentially, she's an open-source, user-created pop star. The video I've linked is an actual concert in which Miku and several other Vocaloids perform. The characters are projected onto a big transparent screen in front of the audience, who is as enthralled as any group of concert goers would be for any other concert. We've actually talked about Miku before, but I didn't know all of this backstory. Thanks, Jake. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I've actually heard the Vocaloid software. It's pretty amazing.
That's really crazy. Cool.
That's definitely taking gorillas to the next level, certainly. It's an actual machine.
Well, Simone, when we saw this thing originally, Tom and I both thought it was robotic. We thought what we were seeing up there, at least the version we saw, looked really, really realistic. It did not look like animation, at least not at first. I think later we kind of sussed it out and went, this is all animated. They had some real crowd effects in there, too, which kind of helped with the illusion. But, the whole reason it came up was we were talking about how creepy robots have gotten. And how they seem to be.
Yeah, Uncanny Valley City. We're right on the cusp here.
Yeah, they look like they're walking. Some of them look like they're talking. The Uncanny Valley is getting narrowed, that gap a little bit. And
yeah.
How do you feel about how far we've come with this kind of stuff, since that's sort of in your wheelhouse?
I think it's kind of fascinating. I think a lot of the stuff that people are doing nowadays is really impressive and kind of a little bit creepy, really. I kind of like that creepy. I like being a little uncomfortable around technology. But for example, I don't know if you guys remember Hanson Robotics. They specialize in really lifelike skin and the robotics that go with it. They had Philip K. Dick. They had a Philip K. Dick bust that would talk and look at people, and it looks uncannily like Philip K. Dick. And now they are even taking it further, and they partnered with David Byrne a while back to do a robot, a Head and Shoulders robot called Carlos. And I think his name was Carlos. And Carlos reacts to what's going on around him, and he looks around and he can move his eyes, and he's got lifelike hair and really kind of scary lifelike skin, and he sings, it's nonsense syllables, only he sounds like David Byrne. So it's really, really, really odd to watch this thing. It's like Eliza for, you know, a singing robot. And it's really, really interesting. I think it's really, I have no idea where this sort of thing might end up, except for, you know, real life applications where you're actually talking to people, either through, instead of an avatar or a screen that you're talking to people through, you're actually communicating with a robot directly that looks and acts like a human. And, you know, eventually maybe it'll be like the animation, like you have no idea that you're actually speaking to a robot and it's not an animated character.
An even more nonsensical David Byrne.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But David Byrne, I mean, that's David Byrne essentially creating a talking head. I think that bears noting that he's building a talking head.
That's a good point. I hadn't even thought about that. And Scott Wilkinson, you said you've used the Vocaloid software?
Well, I haven't used it, but in my previous life as a journalist in the pro audio world, I've heard demos of it quite a few years ago now. And it was pretty scary sounding, I must admit, and I'm sure it's come a long way since then. When I used to go to the NAMM show, the National Association of Music Merchants, which was my big show before I went into consumer electronics, and now CES, of course, is the big show. But I did hear some examples of that. I was also reminded by this initial letter that you read. Last night, I happened to be watching some TV, surfing around, and what movie should come up but Simone?
Sim One.
You remember that show? That's about 5 years ago. The main character who's played by Al Pacino creates a fiction, an animated, a photorealistic actress to star in his movie that's about to tank. And she becomes an international sensation, and he has to, you know, kind of cover for her. It was fascinating. And not only that, we have a Simone on the show.
Yeah. It's all part of the whole mandala Jungian archetype flow.
Yes. I may not actually be real. You may just be calling a super intelligent avatar.
Yeah.
That's right.
We can't say for sure.
Of course, this also brings to mind the Turing test, which is, you know, once you get avatars that are sophisticated enough and can respond from a machine, quote unquote, intelligence, you know, when does the point come where you can't distinguish them from a real person?
We will put you both to the Turing test in our four questions segment later on in the show. Once again, thanks to Jake B. and Robin E. I missed Robin when I first read who the email was from. They also sent us a link to Miku, which we showed a little bit of Miku before, but this is the link that they actually sent to us. If you want to see Miku on stage, there she is in the video version. Anyway, in the audio version, you can't see her, but you'll be able to hear her a little bit. Now, so when you're at the concert, do you actually see her projected? Is that how that works? I guess
it must be. It like gorillas.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. That's good stuff.
That is completely crazy.
All right. Well, nothing is going to outdo that in our actual predictions. But we can try. Damn it. We can try. We'll start with our short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner than later, maybe in the next few years. And Simone, let's start with you. What do you see in your short-term crystal ball?
Okay, well, certainly there's a bunch of stuff that's already happening, which will just kind of become more ubiquitous. I see a lot of interactive machines, you know, that may or may not be classified as a robot. That gets into the whole what is a robot thing. But, you know, people interacting more with machines in their regular daily lives, like there's that school teacher robot in South Korea that they're breaking out now, which is, you know, not just a gimmick. It's like actually teaching children English. So a lot of that sort of thing.
So, yeah, I mean, and I know what you mean about we're loose with the robot term on Forecast all the time, but there is an actual, you know, controversy over what really should be called a robot and what shouldn't. But you're saying robots are going to rule the world.
You know, my line of work is robotic world domination, so I would like to think so. Yeah.
Wow. So we get, like Tom said, we get a lot of sort of, you know, how are we going to behave with machines or what is their role now versus in the future? Are we really facing this imminent danger of machines becoming self-aware and taking the power back from us and all these kinds of issues? It comes up on the show all the time. But when I really, what really interests me is when we get into the area of how will we live with them and among them. It's fun to think science fiction, you know, stuff where we're going to fight them and hate them and they're going to hate us and there'll be a great war between the humans and the machines. And that stuff's fun.
Toasters.
But it seems more likely. It's more likely that we're going to have to figure out how to live among them or to have our lives changed to be more robot-centric. So, you know, the idea of having a maid that is an upright, humanoid-looking, you know, creation walking around cleaning up after everybody is not that... Yeah, and it's not that far-fetched, right? I mean, that seems like that stuff is possible. Do you feel like, Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I tend to think that humanoid robots, that is, robots that walk on two legs, bipedal robots, are not in the imminent future myself. It's just, it's too hard a thing to engineer.
Oh, I beg to differ. My intern, Ben, is sitting right to my right here, and he is actually working on a fleet of bipedal robots. They're 18 inches high. He's putting, what are you doing with them right now? You're putting on, he's doing gyros on them, and he's got, he's working on tilt sensors, he tells me. And they do walk. They stand up on 2 feet. They have no native intelligence. You have to program them. They can be programmed to be autonomous. They can operate autonomously with a routine that you program, but they can also be remotely controlled. And so the next logical step for that is to have some onboard intelligence and have them have more sensors so they can kind of operate in their own kind of sphere, which is what Ben's doing right now.
Do we want them to be that way?
Oh.
Is that... Yeah, I mean, it's fun to do in the early days where we are now, but eventually, do you think we'll need them to be bipedal, or will that sort of fade away as a novelty?
I will agree with Scott that bipedal is really hard. Bipedal was one of those things that, 7-8 years ago, everyone said, oh, that's impossible. You can't do it. And all of these really big corporations and things were working on it. Like they had Osimo and Curio, that was Sony and Osimo's Honda. And then Toyota was doing some work with that as well. But once they figured out how to do it, after they spent millions of dollars in their super high tech labs, when figuring out how to make a robot just walk on its own, you had a bunch of garage builders in Japan who started fabbing their own parts and getting their high torque servos out. And they started building their own bipeds. It was like it was breaking the 4-minute mile. No one thought it could be done. And then Roger Bannister did it. And then everyone started breaking the 4-minute mile. So it's kind of one of those little technology avalanches.
But is bipedalism really the best way for a robot to get around?
Well, that's the issue, right? Like, it makes a good point about whether or not we really need them to walk around. I mean, in fact, I think the Roomba has proved, this is a small example, but it's proved that to vacuum your carpet, that's better probably than some big bulky bipedal robot walking around with a vacuum.
But it also depends on the terrain, because I mean, a lot of times, a Roomba can't go up and down stairs, say.
Good point.
It can go down.
Yeah, you can go down, but it may not.
I know that from experience.
Just toss it, man.
Yeah. But you're right. It cannot navigate the stairs on purpose.
Yeah, but I think you see things like the Mars rovers, which have 6 legs, but they have wheels on the end of them, essentially. So they can kind of navigate the Mars terrain. So I think robots really just have to be super specialized for what they're going to be doing. And sometimes 2 legs are better, and sometimes 6 legs are better, and sometimes wheels are better.
Do you think we'll come up with something totally different that we haven't conceived of yet? That's sort of like maybe not the universal way of navigating any kind of terrain, but some sort of multi-purpose way.
Oh, possibly. Boston Dynamics has already come up with, I'm sure you guys have seen the videos for Big Dog. It's a four-legged, it's kind of creepy. That's also creepy without actually looking humanoid.
Stop kicking Big Dog. It will turn on us one day.
Definitely.
Yeah. No, I think Big Dog is very, very cool. It's very interesting, but it's still that sort of quadruped situation, right?
Yeah, it is. Oh, there we go. There's Big Dog. But yeah, it's a quadruped, but it can do a whole lot more than so it can go over terrain that a wheeled robot might have a little bit of trouble with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
At least
that thing gives me the willies, that video. Anyway,
I am fascinated with Big Dog. He made it into my top five robots that I did. Not too long ago.
Oh, in your top five. Awesome.
Yeah. I did top five.
What was your number one?
We'll have to go to revision3.com/Tom's Top 5 and watch Top 5 Real Life Robots. Find out. Because I can't remember. let's move over to Scott Wilkinson. When you look into your short-term crystal ball, Scott, what do you see?
Well, of course, I'm looking at consumer electronics, in particular home theater. And, you know, we're already seeing an avalanche of 3D, and there's a lot of people are saying, oh, it's already over. It's just it's a fad that comes and goes, and this one will go. I'm less convinced that it's going to go this time because all the studios and all the manufacturers are so far behind it, and they've spent so much money on it that I don't think it's going to go. And I think ultimately any TV, just about any TV you buy, at least a high-end TV, is going to have 3D capabilities in it, whether or not you choose to use them. But they're going to be there. And we're going to see more 3D broadcasting. That's been a problem with the 3D adoption so far. There's very little content. There are a lot of TVs available now, but there's very little content. So that's a problem. Another one that is commonly predicted, and I tend to think, you know, if we're talking a few years, I'd say 5 to 10, we're certainly going to see higher resolutions than we do now. HDTV is 1920 by 1080. And we're going to soon see what's called 4K, which is 4096 by 2160. Which many people say it actually is more impressive, looks even better, perhaps even more three-dimensional than 3D.
And how does that work with 4K and 3D? Does 3D trail behind these resolution improvements, or can they kind of roll out simultaneously?
They could roll it out simultaneously, particularly since processor power has gotten so much faster and more powerful, to use a iteration there. There will be, as soon as 4K becomes commonplace, I'm sure there will be 3D 4K because processors will be powerful enough to do it then anyway. The problem with 4K, again, like 3D, is there has to be content that is delivered in 4K resolution. What we might see at first is Blu-ray type resolutions up converted to 4K, which isn't that impressive. What's really impressive is seeing real 4K material on a 4K display. And studios are archiving movies in 4K now. So it shouldn't be that hard to, once 4K displays get into the marketplace, they can just re-release yet again.
Sell it to us again.
Yeah, one more time, please.
Doesn't that also push us further down the road of another digital, quote-unquote, disc format in our future? Because it seems like, okay, so every time we get to a certain point, we have a certain quality. What happens is they say, oh, online streaming content is going to be king now. We're going to see a lot of this come. And now we're starting to see 720p content come, and it looks good, and it's great and everything. And there's devices that will stream at 1080p, but no one's got the content to stream at 1080p because nobody's got the bandwidth to make it a reasonable idea.
This stuff
always seems to be one step ahead. So are we looking at another disc-based format in the future?
You know, that is a tough question. I personally hope so, because disc-based video and audio simply is better than streamed or downloaded content because of the compression issues and because of the bandwidth issues. And as you guys know, the U.S. lags so far behind the rest of the world in terms of generally available bandwidth. You know, in Korea, South Korea, people are routinely getting 20 megabits down. And in the U.S., I don't think that's becoming more common, but it's still not common.
The main point is it's always dragging behind, right? Like it's that's the problem, is that it's always like, oh, okay, well now we can do 4K content on discs. Too bad, because our bandwidth just caught up to do 1080p without any loss, and we got to catch up again.
Exactly. Yeah. So there may very well be another disc format. People have been predicting, oh, Blu-ray is going to be the last physical media format ever, and we're never going to see another physical media after that. I'm not so sure about that.
I don't know. Never is a pretty strong word.
Well, sure, of course. Never say never.
Do we ever
and
get
Betamax
to...
Betamax was going to be the be-all, end-all tape format, too. So.
Yes, exactly. I still believe.
I still have a Betamax machine.
I've got a couple laser discs upstairs.
Beta kept going in the pro market all this time.
Oh, yeah.
Both my parents are TV producers, so we had Beta stuff all over the place ever since I was a kid. So.
Yeah, all the TV stations I ever worked at used Beta. That was just, you know, that or 3/4-inch tape. That was your choices.
Yeah, 3/4-inch, 1-inch machines, yeah.
Now, do you think we ever get to retinal displays? And when I use that very loosely, I know it's like robots. There's a loose way to use it, and there's a real. But do we get to a point where we can't improve the resolution any farther than we could, you know, that we could tell?
So you just jack it all in your brain.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I was going to save that one for the 100 to 500 down the road question, but. You know, yes. I mean, certainly there is a resolution limit on the eye. And retinal displays, I suppose you could mean wearing glasses that have the displays built into them and you see that directly, or, you know, jacked in biologically. That's quite a bit farther down the line, I would say. But the bottom line is that in terms of resolution and getting to the point where it doesn't make any difference anymore because the human eye can't see any more difference, that depends on the size of the screen and the distance you are sitting away from it. Because if you sit far enough away from even a standard def TV, you won't be able to see any greater definition or resolution than that. So those factors come into play when you're talking about what's the ultimate limit.
I see a crossing of Simone and Scott's interests here in implanted robotic eyes.
Yeah, man.
But just
cybernetics,
right,
man.
Into the optic nerve.
I have one tiny question before we move on to the midterm stuff, and that is, and this is for you, Scott, and it goes to your first prediction, 3D being ubiquitous and becoming this normal thing that we just all sort of accept and more content comes and everything else. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like in the near term, though, we are going to get away from this weird middle ground half step of glasses required and move on to these new technologies that Toshiba and others are touting? Of glasses-free 3D experiences, both in theaters and at home, and you know, in various devices. How quickly do you see that happening, if at all?
I don't see it happening really quickly. I myself have put a number on that of maybe 10 years before it's commonplace. Mm-hmm. There are a number of problems with it that, as implemented so far. One is that in most cases, each eye only sees half the resolution that is available on the screen. And there are limitations as to where you can sit and where you can put your head. And so those kinds of limitations, I think, make it less attractive, certainly to me. There has to be a way to isolate the two eyes in order to see the two images without any what's called crosstalk. So the glasses are really the best way to do that now, certainly the only way that I know of to get full resolution in both eyes. So that's not going to happen for a while. Yes, Toshiba and others are working on it. And it does work in small displays. If you're talking about iPhones and little portable
Nintendo
gaming
3DS,
devices.
Yeah.
Exactly. It works pretty well on those. I've seen those and they work pretty well. But you can't scale it up to a big screen experience very easily.
All right, let's move on to our long-term prediction. These are more of the in 100 years we'll be in flying cars sorts of things. and we'll stick with you, Scott. What do you see in the long term?
In 100 years' time, I would love to see, and who knows, might even be something akin to the Star Trek holodeck.
Ah, I wondered when we were going to get the holograms.
You know, there already are people working on holographic displays where the object being displayed is like in the room with you. It still looks pretty cheesy and it's very low res and, you know, it's all in its extreme infancy, but... so was everything else that we now take for granted at one point. So, you know, in 100 years, we could easily see very realistic holographic displays. even holodecks where we interact in some way. You guys watch Sci-Fi Science with Michio Kaku?
I have not watched it as much as I would like to, but it's a great show.
Yeah, it's a great show. And he talked about, in that show every week, he presents some sort of science fiction thing that we've seen in Star Trek or Star Wars or something like that, that he figures out how it could actually be built in the near future. And the holodeck one disappointed me some because, for example, to walk over different kinds of terrain, he had the person standing on these kind of platform step things that provided different levels of resistance and that sort of thing, but it seemed very clunky to me. So that's not my idea of a good time, but certainly in 100 years we could easily see holographic displays that are fully realized, fully opaque, looks like the person's in the room with you.
That's awesome. See, this is one of those predictions we have not yet had on the show, and I don't know why it hasn't come up. It's kind of like we've been secretly crossing our fingers. When is someone going to say holograms? Because it seems like an obvious thing. You know, I want to see, Princess Leia on my desk putting the thing in the R2-D2 and try to figure it out. And that's an awesome thing. And we often get these ideas or get kind of motivated by what we see in science fiction. Do you feel like 100 years is not too far off? Because to me, it seems like we could pull this off in a couple of decades. Or am I just so unattached to that tech that I just don't understand how it works?
It's a good question. 100 years may be too long. If we know anything from technology, it's that the pace of development grows probably exponentially. I mean, if there's some way to measure that. And what happened in the last 100 years... From the last 100 years till now, well, the same amount of development will probably take place in 20 years, as you say, a couple of decades. So it may very well be a lot less than 100 years. In 100 years, maybe we'll have that jack-in thing that we were mentioning a little earlier.
Yeah.
Where you plug something into your, it's a matrix kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Or Neuromancer. That's what I was thinking.
Exactly.
Of,
yeah. That sort of thing. That could well be.
And I'm sitting here thinking of how we're going to do Skype once we get holograms.
We literally have a hive mind.
The Mac client doesn't have holograms yet, so we have to wait to broadcast in holograms.
Right. Well, that's a good question whether or not this stuff will come to the marketplace via the way we like it, which is often open source and, kind of indie development and that kind of thing. And it's hard to say. I actually think that it probably will. I think some of this tech will surprise us where it comes from. I've seen people go out and buy a $150 Kinect for their Xbox 360, hack the thing, and do some amazing stuff with it that I'm sure Microsoft didn't even think of, and maybe are mad that they didn't, and maybe want to sue because they didn't. But my point is that oftentimes it takes the creative mind of the individual out there with some wacky idea to make it happen. So some Star Wars nut in the year 2025... Probably be the guy to bring it to us, and that'll be great.
One more point about that real quick is that I did read a news item during the World Cup that said that the Japanese, either a company or NHT, I forget who it was, were planning to broadcast the 2022 World Cup holographically.
If Japan had got the bid, that was part of it. I don't know if they're still going to do it since Qatar and Russia got the bid.
That's right.
Yeah. So I hope Russia, they still do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Russia will broadcast it in PAL, and it'll be 320 by 240. I can't wait.
World Cup broadcast you. somebody had to get that in. All right, let's move over to you, Simone. Your long-term prediction. You're looking farther into the distant future. What do you see?
Well, I would have to kind of go with Scott's sort of brain machine interface. I mean, the whole hologram thing is really cool, but I think in terms of brain machine interface is something that I'm obviously really interested in. I mean, I don't want to be a cyborg or anything, but I think there's lots of cool stuff happening in super 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 early infancy stages. I heard about this thing the other day called optogenetics, which is genetically modifying brain tissue in, I think they're doing it in mice nowadays, up from worms or what have you, where you can program brain cells with light. This is the theory anyway. I don't know how successful they've been at it, but just imagine what you can build on that. It's just ridiculous. It's like looking at a wheat field and seeing a chocolate cake. It's like, wow, we figured out how to do this. Now, where could we take it? It's pretty much limitless. But I don't know if you guys have heard of this at all, but I just was super excited about it. There are all these papers everywhere on literally flashing lights in the face of a mouse and having it exhibit the desired behavior. It's crazy. And so I think, wow, you know, in 100 years, that'll be commonplace. Who knows? You know, you can program your house will be, or, you know, organic tissue that you can program with your holographic interface. You just call your house and you tell it to turn on the organic heat generator or what have you.
Or your employees.
Yeah, your employees. You can program your drone clone army to do your bidding.
I hate to keep returning to the Kinect pile, but we're already seeing, I mean, yeah, they're coming out as quote unquote games or toys now, but we're seeing technologies that aren't that far off from what you just said. I mean, you can walk into a room with an Xbox and a Kinect, and I'm not shilling for this thing. I don't own one. I actually kind of think it's like way step one, and we need to see stuff, you know, down the pipe before I'm get too excited about it. But the idea of waving a hand or it knowing who you are because of your shape or commanding through voice, telling your Xbox to do things or whatever, all of that stuff, those feel like early baby steps toward a world where we are really interacting with, you know, stuff. I honestly, you could look at the clapper as the forefather of this idea.
Our ability. We'll get to the Star Trek computer where you just talk to the machine and it does your bidding. But yeah. I love the Kinect. I think it's really cool. I think the fact that Microsoft is now backpedaling, saying, "Oh no, we don't mind if you hack it. No, it's totally fine."
Yeah.
And then after they threw such a hissy fit about Adafruit putting up that bounty. I don't know if you guys heard about that, but
yeah, we talked about that on TNT. Yeah.
Cool. So it's you know, now that it's, my friends and I were sitting around the other day going, "Oh my gosh, what would you control with a Kinect? Like, what could we do with it?" And just, there are so many ways that you can just play with it and who knows where it'll take us. Yeah.
Well, now that I'm putting together the flashing lights experiments in the Kinect, and I'm starting to realize that Microsoft can program you.
It's going to be snow crash all over again.
Totally.
Only in the future.
I mean, that really is science fiction coming true, though, because we've seen a million stories, at least that I can think of, where, you know, the flashing light in the eye hypnotized. It's usually under the guise of a hypnosis, but it's the same sort of idea. You know,
or
programs you to do something.
In Star Trek Next Generation with the episode called The Game.
Yeah.
Yes, everybody got addicted.
Everybody got addicted to this flashing light thing, and Data had to come in and zap them with flashing light pattern.
You remember that? It was Will Wheaton and Ashley Judd, yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Ashley Judd.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers, only with technology.
All right, let's move on to our crazy-ass predictions, and Simone, we'll stick with you. One really far out there forecast, time frame doesn't matter, just take the leap. What do you got?
Well, you know, my knee-jerk response to that sort of question is always, you know, bog standard singularity. You know, we can all go from the jacking your brain directly into the computer that you're interfacing, whereas upload yourself into the cloud and there you are, and you don't have to worry about the meat space, as it were. I'm not saying I'm in favor of it or I believe it is like a good thing, but I think it could theoretically, the way we're going, you never know. Ray Kurzweil certainly seems to think so. So
do you get hung up on the, is that really me if it's just a translation of me, or do you think that matters?
Or maybe you're saved to the wrong hard drive and which copy is you? Who knows? Yeah, that involves a whole lot of thorny philosophical issues, and I'm sure we will have evolved to, hoping that we will have evolved to kind of figure all that out, or else just have some really amazing philosophical thought going on in the universe.
I've always been able to come to kind of grips with this idea, because I kind of do some of this now. Let's say I've got, I do a lot of illustrating and stuff. And so let's say I create a file and that file is called whatever, and it's still the work I did. But I go ahead and make two backups of it. I got one on a thumb drive, and I got another one on an external USB drive. I now have three versions of this thing I created. They're all equal until I take one of them and do something to it, put a mustache on it or cross something out or erase something. And I know what I've done, and I don't have any kind of weird philosophical block that, oh my gosh, that's now not the same as the original. What have I done? And I think that we can get to a point where we can apply that kind of thinking to that kind of future. Because in the end, what I experienced today, this Dr. Pepper I've been drinking, and then you make a copy of me. All three of me are going to remember that, but one of me is going to step into traffic by accident. The other one's going to fall off a cliff, and the other one's going to be just fine. And I don't really have a problem with that because I know I made those copies. I know that they exist. I know that that was the intent. So I've never really understood the clash with this. Like, I do understand where it comes from, but I'm just saying I feel like I could kind of come to grips with it and not have it be such
that's
a big deal.
That's kind of an interesting thought. You know, instead of it being like a limited thing, like, oh no, which one is really you? It's like, well, I'm trilocational. I could be three places on the planet at once. And I kind of prefer to think of it that way, actually.
What's weird is if one of them competes. So like if you...
If one of them gets copies. The job you were after.
Right. It's like, people are identical. Why did you choose her? Yeah.
Right. And he becomes more successful and marries a supermodel and does all these things and, you know, has this huge life ahead of him that you were obviously just as capable of having, because at the time of copy, you all were kind of, you know, equal. That's when it gets a little bit weird for me, because, you know, then you'd feel like a weird jealousy about yourself. And that, I don't know, that folds in on itself and everyone, you know, goes bananas. But at the core, the idea of it doesn't really throw me off that much.
I'm imagining the celebrity gossip about, you know, the rich, famous people who aren't taking care of their copies, and their copies live in squalor. And isn't this a shame? And something needs to be done.
Yeah, or using your copies to for organ transplants and things.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right. See, I have a problem with the singularity idea in that, as we've seen in the past leading up to the present, technological advancements often outstrip philosophical ideas, sociological, emotional awareness, and so on, which could mean that as we get to this technology where we can download ourselves into avatars or whatever, our consciousness might not catch up, and the singularity might in fact crush us all.
I have a question of whether I think singularity or no singularity, I don't know if it's near or not. I think it's a nice thought experiment. But I don't think it's particularly practical. I think in the offing, though, we do gain something that may be an asymptote to immortality. It's so long mm-hmm. that it doesn't really matter. Right. Whether that ends up being biological or mechanical is what I can never decide on. Simone, do you have an insight to this, working with the mechanical all the time? Do you think we just improve our organs and our medicine and our biology, or do we move into machines?
Well, I don't know. That's actually kind of an issue that has come up in the past. For example, if you think about the Paralympics, mm-hmm. Paralympic athletes are essentially, augmented people, if you really kind of think about it. For example, there's that really, really famous, I cannot remember her name. I think her first name is Amy, but she's a Paralympic athlete, works with Matthew Barney, the artist, and she's a runner, and she has these super mega specialized legs that just enable her to just burn down the track. And it's kind of like invites one of those questions, you know, in the future, will Olympic athletes be replacing their real legs with running legs? Because the running legs might work a lot better than any human leg ever could. So, I think it could go both ways. We could all just be uploading ourselves, or we could just be all turning ourselves into cyborgs. If you stretch it, it's happening now. You know, my husband has pins in his legs because he crushed his leg, and the pins hold his ankle together. You get cochlear implants for little kids that their brains can process the sound, but for whatever reason, their ear canal can't. So you have a synthetic cochlea, and they hear better than they would. I mean, they don't necessarily hear better than someone who can already hear natively, but
that's for sure. They don't hear better than someone who can hear natively. They can only hear like 16 or 32 different frequency bands, so it's much, much more limited than natural hearing.
But as the technology progresses, you might get something that would kind of lend itself to, you know, being better than more human than human. And also cochlear implants, they might wear out, but say the cilia in your ear, which enables you to translate all of that, all of the sound vibrations in the air to your ear and then in turn to your brain, those wear out all the time. Like if you listen to too much loud music, the cilia will just wear out and you'll notice over time that your hearing goes down. But a cochlear implant you can replace. So you have a brand new one. You know, if you need it, you know, as the technology, and I'm going to qualify this because I agree with you, the technology is not there yet.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
Did you slip in a Tyrell Corporation slogan in there?
No, actually, someone on the chat room asked me, you know, presented to me the scenario. You see a turtle in the desert.
More human than human.
Right.
I think maybe it ends up, now after having heard you guys talk, I think maybe it ends up bifurcating. There are people who decide that they want to, you know, limit the number of augmentations that they have and try to improve organic, like an organic movement where they, you know, they just try to you know, extend
movements.
Their life through medicine and whatnot. And then there's another group that's like, no, we're just going to go all mechanical and upload our brains into the hard drive and be done with it and live forever that way.
Live Tom, did you know world. That was my favorite word? I don't know if you knew that.
What
bifurcation.
Is?
Just throwing it out there.
Really?
Bifurcation. No. Right.
I'm glad
Actually, I really liked your use of the word asymptote. That was fabulous.
Thank you.
Yeah, great on the vocabulary today.
Well, I'm no anti-disestablishmentarianism, but I get by. All right. Let's move over to your crazy ass prediction, Scott. Something like in 2,000 years, we'll all be made of cheese or something like that. What do you got?
Well, I've been thinking about this as we've been talking so far, and I think it's in a couple thousand years, it would be eminently more practical to just upload consciousness into some virtual world that could be whatever you want at your conscious direction, and immortality is there, and no physical problems, you know. I mean, physical parts wear out always, you know. So why try to even replace them with mechanical parts that are ultimately going to wear out at some point themselves? And then, as Simone said, you know, well, you just replace the cochlear implant or you replace your legs with better ones or whatever. Why even worry about any of that? Just go into Second Life, you know, and live there your whole time.
So if you this has come up on a show before, this idea of being uploaded into, or you choosing basically your own virtual world, yeah, saying, all right, well, this is the way I like things. Presumably you also like things with, say, friends or family or acquaintances in it. Do you have virtual versions of those people, or are we building a tech that would allow for us to get real consciousness on consciousness interaction with people that we know and love? Or do you feel like that's just out of the, who cares, we're so good at this, we can make all the people we love all we want and they don't have to be real, because what's the difference?
Well, see, I am of the school that believes that it's going to be a really, really long time, if ever, that machine intelligence will truly be what we would call sentient or conscious, because I believe there's a quality of consciousness that is ineffable, beyond technology. Although now that I'm thinking about it, quantum computers, if there's any chance of it at all, it's quantum computers, because I believe consciousness to be ultimately a quantum phenomenon. And so if we really do develop quantum computers, then yes, perhaps machine intelligence could develop our own friends, essentially create them out of whole cloth or whole quantum dots, as it were. And then who cares? But I would hope that that our friends and family could come along with us if they chose to. And if not, we could interact with them in some sort of interface with the physical world, if they chose to stay in the physical world. So I don't see that as necessarily an isolating thing. And of course, if everybody were pure consciousness in the machine, then we could experience connections such as we can't possibly imagine now.
I can see that. I personally, I like to cuddle, so I would have a problem with the interface on a purely quantum level, but I'm sure we'd come up with a cuddle analog.
Slash cuddle.
I'm sure. Yeah, the slash cuddle.
Slash cuddle.
I mean, honestly, all it takes is one generation of removal. So all you'd need to do is be one of those pioneering guys that was in this virtual world with nothing but virtual friends. And that was hard for him at first because, man, these aren't the people I know and like, and they're all off doing their own thing. But when he's done, well, I guess we're all done because no one's interacting with anybody. But let's assume we're reproducing some other way. When he's done, nobody else knows the difference. All their friends are virtual. And
yeah, you can't miss what you've never had.
Mm-hmm. Right. My kids don't miss MTV because they have YouTube. They have no idea what the crap I'm talking about with YouTube. But my 16-year-old loves music videos. So what's the difference? It's the same kind of thing, I think. And I hate to, you know, I hate to say it. I feel like that's more possible than any of these crazy predictions, that we are going to get to a stage where real people aren't going to matter so much anymore. And we will, you know, we'll slowly pool into our virtual world of, you know, fake dreams and nothing will really truly matter.
Maybe for their own reason. That's pretty
scary.
Actually,
a scary thing that is happening, just kind of to you know, you don't miss what you never had, is I have a toddler. And I'm noticing a lot of people are talking about, well, you know, you have to teach kids how to play. You have to teach them how to use their imagination. Like Sesame Street does it. It's like, this is how you pretend you're a princess, la, 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 la. And it's the most amazing thing, because there's always entertainment. You know, to her, my phone isn't something you just call grandma on. It's something you watch TV on, and Elmo lives in the phone, and and baby videos of herself live in the phone, and she's never going to have to amuse herself. So we're like setting her up. It's like, you know, okay, you have to go outside for 2 hours and don't come back in, and no, you can't take your cell phone, because, you know, you have to learn how to use your brain to play and entertain yourself. But that's something that's happening now, which I think is a little scary.
Go outside and don't come back till you've built an imaginary world.
Exactly.
Man, I used to get in trouble. It's so funny. I used to get in trouble for talking to myself out in the backyard because I was doing that, right? I was just making up whatever it was. And my parents were like, you're embarrassing us to the neighbors. I'm like, I'm 8 years old. How's that embarrassing? But it's flipped around. It's that there's too much entertainment now that you have to actually choose.
You always, and I'm guilty of this myself. You know, if I'm anywhere for longer than 30 seconds, I want to check my Twitter stream on my phone. You know, I want to see what the hive mind's doing and all that.
Yeah.
But you know, it's good to kind of pull yourself out of that. And I have to, you have to set a good example. So it's tricky. It's tricky when you're
falling into this last night. This is kind of embarrassing, but what better show than this to admit this to? But last night, it's a pretty late, I don't know, 11:30, something like that. And I really should just be going to bed. I had a meeting early this morning. But no, I was arguing with myself if I should finish the book I'm halfway through, the comic book series I'm halfway through, the movie I'm halfway through, and the documentary I'm halfway through. All of it could be right on my iPad there right with me. So super convenient.
Oh my gosh.
But I got like these eight things that are unfinished that I'm really into, that I really want to get to. And I ended up having such a, you know, brain fart about it. I ended up just going to sleep. Like, forget it. I can't do this.
Well,
which was probably the wisest thing to do. I'm going to play Angry Birds for 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I last night I had a similar thing where I was like, I've got three episodes of The Event on the DVR I really should watch. But, you know, I just want to watch episode one of Firefly. I'm going to be bad. Like, it's a responsibility for me to watch the things I've recorded on the DVR somehow. And I'm cheating by watching something I want to.
Yeah, I have all these print magazines because, you know, I grew up on print. That was my iPhone before, you know, to occupy my brain when I was waiting for 30 seconds before I had an iPhone. But yeah, I have a stack of New Yorkers and a stack of Rolling Stone. I get the New York Times Sunday edition that goes unread until Friday. And I go, oh my God, I have such a backlog. And it's like, wow, this issue should be fun. You know, it should be, should be interesting.
Yeah.
This is why I've given up virtually all print subscriptions. Just because the paper just piles up. And you can get the information online, and it doesn't require paper.
Yeah, and you don't feel like you wasted a bunch of paper if you don't go to NewYorkTimes.com and read the paper.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Although
right,
you cannot start your fire with your iPad.
That's true.
True. I can't pack things to ship with my iPad.
Can't wrap fish in your iPad, or you shouldn't.
I have to say, Tom, good for you for watching Firefly, one of my favorite shows of all time.
Oh, I love that show.
Yes, I second that.
I watch it over and over. All right, time for four questions. This is the segment where each of our guests face four rapid-fire questions about the future, and we ask that you not stop and think. Just answer with whatever comes to mind. Scott Johnson, start us off.
All right, I'm going to ask my four questions of Simone. Simone, are you sitting comfortably as we often ask?
I am so ready.
All right, here we go.
Can I phone R2 behind me if I need advice?
This is not Cash Cab or How to Be a Millionaire or any of that, although I love Cash Cab. Anyway.
I do too.
I'm dying for one day somebody's going to release a bunch of lost footage from Cash Cab where people get super ticked and, like, you know,
storm out.
Start smashing things up.
Can't wait. Anyway, here we go, Simone. When and why will Pepsi Clear make a big comeback?
Oh, you know, when we are just all ingesting everything through IV bottles. When we don't actually have to taste it or experience it, it's just sugar in a bag that we stick in our arms or necks or, you know, tubing, whatever kind of tubing we're using.
It's virtual Pepsi Clear.
It's a virtual bag. It's the idea of that. Sugar.
Love that. What company right now is probably run by robots and we are just not aware of it yet?
Oh, gosh. I have my suspicions about Amazon. They're too dang efficient.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little scary. It makes me happy when they mess up because it's like, oh, there is a human back there. Okay, cool.
Nice. Yeah, they are pretty dang efficient. Number three, when we run out of sawdust, what will we cook into our chicken nuggets?
People. It will be made of people.
Soylent nuggets. Green.
Yeah. Soylent nuggets is out, Tom.
Soylent nuggets. Tuesday is Soylent Nugget Day.
You know what, the green nuggets or the red nuggets? The green are made of people. Yeah, that's probably more
gross.
Protein.
Quinn in the chat room says, actual chicken? I'm with him on that. That'd be great.
Never have.
That would be good. That's a good answer.
Last question. Who is the worst movie robot of all time?
Oh, my God. There are so many. I'm kind of fond of all of them. But the worst movie robot of all time. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to be on the hook for this one. okay, I'm thinking too much. I can't think of any. I love all robots. I love all of them. I can't help it.
They've brainwashed you.
As it turns out, that was the correct answer. Nice job, you guys.
There is none. There is no bad movie robot.
There's no such thing.
All right, let's move over to you, Scott Wilkinson. Are you sitting comfortably, sir?
I am.
Good, then we'll begin. Question number one. Will quadraphonics ever return?
I hope not.
I was gonna follow it up with under what conditions, but I think that we just better leave it right there. Question number two. Do you think that LP that they attached to Voyager that's now like outside the solar system, do you think that ever gets listened to?
Ooh, good question. I tend to think not. I think that if an alien civilization finds it, I mean, I think they left instructions. They tried to leave instructions on how to play it,
but
I don't think it's going to happen.
And if they did, they probably wouldn't. They'd probably hate the music.
Well, I think it part of it was, hello in like 50 different languages.
Right.
And what good is that going to do an alien civilization? Nothing.
Question number three. What will the next new genre of music be called?
Ooh. Wow, you got me. You got me there.
You got me there is what the next new genre of music will be called. You heard it here first, folks.
It'll start out as You Really Got Me, and then they don't want to get in trouble. It'll become You Got Me There.
Or tubas. Maybe tubas.
Yes.
Somebody in the chat room.
Clearly the next genre of music will be centered around tubas. No
question. Of course, obviously.
That.
All right. And finally, question number four. Which do you think will come first, the zombie apocalypse or the robot uprising?
Robot uprising.
Why?
Because as we've been talking this whole hour, if robots gain consciousness, then that's it. We're toast.
And they will march into battle with their tuba rock.
That's right. Tuba rock. That's what we'll call it.
Personally, I have a robot uprising in my house almost every day. So.
Yeah. You have experience. I want to be near you when the robot uprising happens because you speak the language.
We're planning on being the last ones up against the wall when the revolution comes.
Thank goodness.
Here, so.
All right. Well, unfortunately, that is the end of the show. Thank you guys so much for being on.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
Simone Davalos of the, let's see if I can remember this because it's still not written down. a blogger at suicidebots.com and co-producer of RoboGames.
Yep. That's what I do for them.
Anything else that you want to tell people about before we let you go?
I really like robots. I have a robot issue. I love teaching people about robots. Come to RoboGames. We have so many robots under one roof that we're in Guinness for it. It happens in April, and everyone should come and bring a robot.
And Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks, editor of UltimateAVMag.com, and online editor of HomeTheaterMag.com. I think that covers it, but anything else you want to tell people about?
Well, I'd love for people to come to ultimateavmag.com and enter the sweepstakes to win a Sherwood Newcastle R972 AV receiver and fill out our reader survey so that we can know who our readers are and how better to serve them.
All right. Scott Johnson, a fantastic show. Anything we need to talk about before we leave?
Well, normally we would pimp another show, or we would say follow this thing on Twitter or check out this site. But today, I'm going to recommend people listening and watching get into World of Warcraft.
Wow.
Buy Cataclysm, coming out tomorrow. Or no, excuse me, tonight, midnight. And then if you're on Earthen Ring, look for Bob X, GURP, oh, heck, Maui, Nicole Spag, Hokkaido. Too many names. Ralph. What's Veronica's character? Winema. Look us all up and hang out and play. Let's play World of Warcraft this week, people. It's time. The cataclysm has hit. It's time we play this game. What are you doing right now? Listen to us. Go play World of Warcraft.
Yeah. That's what are you doing message. Outside? Using your imagination.
Gosh darn imagination using. You jack into your computer right now.
My God.
That's right.
All of you.
All right. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. And thanks to our guests. It's been a great show. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
But it's only 32 years away.